This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back to the Now News panel on AMI. I'm Dave Brown alongside Michelle McQuigg and Megan Gilmore. Let's get some quick takes on several stories about COVID-19 and long-term care homes. Several provinces have introduced policies that will impact residents and employees moving forward. And let's begin in Quebec, where Quebec Health Minister Christian Dubé says coercive efforts to get more healthcare workers vaccinated against COVID-19 are starting to work. Dubé says that the government decree requiring public sector health workers to get vaccinated or be tested at least 3 times per week will soon be extended to private long-term care homes. Workers who refuse can be reassigned or suspended without pay. Now, we've talked about mandatory vaccines for long-term care workers before. This is definitely an approach that we did not discuss when we had that conversation on the news panel. Megan, what do you think about these measures as a way to encourage folks to get the jab?
So I still stand by my earlier comments about there are real concerns about if you can mandate a person to get a vaccine. That is a big legal issue that is valid, and I still stand by that. I would be of the position that when it comes to these things, it's better to, you'll hear the analogy, it's better to give the carrot rather than the stick. And the education, making things more accessible to people, is likely a more palatable approach in these situations, keeping in mind legal responsibilities to accommodate those who have protected reasons for not being able to get a vaccine. The part from a worker's perspective that makes me nervous is you losing pay. I think redirecting where you can work might be a more appropriate response.
It's fair to say that there is a compromise here in the sense that if you do take the three COVID-19 tests a week, it would exempt you from having to get that vaccine. So that's the measure in place that I think they're using there as a little bit of the carrot or the stick, although getting the literal stick up your nose 3 times a week is not the most comforting thing in the world. But Michelle, what do you think about this this compromise, saying that if you don't want to get a vaccine, it's going to be the test 3 times a week?
Yeah, I find it interesting, actually. For one, it's way off brand for a government of this ideological stripe to just straight up intervene and say, no, you have no choice in this matter. So I find that interesting. And the compromise itself doesn't seem unreasonable to me. If I'm being honest, what they're clearly trying to do is weigh the health risks of COVID-19 and the impact that it's had on long-term care residents. What I do find a bit unusual now is that most of those residents are themselves immunized. So I'm a little perplexed by the timing of all this. I think it would have, I probably would have found it made more sense a bit earlier on when vaccine uptake was lower across the board. The government has set a clear target and said that they'll probably cease and desist with this one once they get to the 80 or 85% level of vaccination, and now they're at 67, so they're getting there. I don't think it's wholly unreasonable given the specific circumstances, but I definitely would be a bit nervous if this became standard procedure.
Okay, well, let's jump from Quebec to Ontario. And Michelle, I know this one caught your eye this week as well, where COVID-19 hospitalizations and intensive care occupancy have hit new peaks in recent weeks. The provincial government issued an emergency order meant to free up hospital capacity. The province says hospitals will now be able to transfer patients waiting for a long-term care bed to any nursing home without their consent. Ontario's Health Minister Christine Elliott says transfers without consent will only take place in the most urgent situations and only if doctors are confident the move won't compromise the patient's condition. So, Michelle, this one jumped out to you. What do you think of this approach to try and ease strain on hospital capacity?
This one troubles me for a number of reasons. For one thing, it speaks to an issue that went unaddressed for a long time prior to this. A lot of these patients are referred to as alternate level of care patients, and there's horrifying stuff to be uncovered around who exactly qualifies for this. You quite often wind up with young disabled people living in long-term care facilities for seniors because there was nowhere else to, quote, put them. So this speaks to that issue as well. But what I really worry about now is who is going to be affected by this. And I can't imagine it's going to be anything other than those who can't advocate for themselves for a whole variety of reasons. That will probably impact people of color, people who are poor, people with developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities. The whole policy I find very troubling, and I understand why the government did it. The situation in Ontario intensive care units is absolutely terrifying. They have a very serious problem to deal with. And they, in fairness, did try to take some of the other measures prior to enacting this mandatory order. On Saturday, for instance, they said that they would encourage people to accept a placement elsewhere, but they weren't going to mandate it. Four or five days later, they changed their tune, and I have concerns about what the route they've gone here.
I also agree that I feel as though individuals who are marginalized are going to be the ones impacted most by this. I'm also concerned in the face of the report released by the Auditor General this week in regards to the way that long-term care homes were woefully unprepared to deal with COVID-19. I'm not sure if they're necessarily able to deal with random emergency policies in this moment, even as vaccinations have occurred in a lot of those LTCs. It still speaks to a spaces that are not necessarily prepared for swift and quick changes in an emergency situation.
Megan, stay tuned on that front. The Long-Term Care Commission is releasing its report today.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Megan, I know that we've talked a lot about with you, both in your accessibility report and in these news panel segments, in regards to some of these quick policies that might impact marginalized people. What was your reaction when you heard the story this week?
I share Michelle's concerns, probably verbatim. Concerns about people who are younger adults living in long-term care for a variety of reasons, concerns with people who don't have a network of family or friend support who are advocating for them. There's reasons why people want to be in the long-term care homes where they say, like, this is where I would like to be. There's reasons for that. So a lot of that's geographic, and I want to be close to my support system. And then what if you move somebody across the province without them knowing? I would probably just say everything about this policy concerns me. And then there's also a question of what about people who are still living at home in the community and they're trying to get into long-term care right now, if that's the route that they're going. How does this affect them? I feel there's a lot of backlogs. And there's so many health systems that are impacted by this that need reform and consideration. Again, as Michelle just pointed out, we are awaiting another report from the Commission on Long-Term Care in Ontario. So we'll see if this gets addressed in any way.
Finally, let's land in Saskatchewan, where the Saskatchewan government says its COVID-19 vaccination program will allow visitor restrictions to be eased at long-term care and personal care homes in the province. Restrictions eased yesterday on paper. However, a number of conditions must be met first. The provinces said that residents must be fully vaccinated, with at least 90% of residents in the facility fully vaccinated, and 3 weeks have to have elapsed since the second dose was administered. Residents will be allowed an unlimited number of family members or support people to visit indoors, but only two at a time, and up to four family members or support people will be allowed to visit outdoors. Megan, how do you feel about this easing of restrictions?
I think it's long overdue, a conversation about visiting restrictions. Again, I still hold on to my ever-present concern about can you mandate somebody get a vaccine? However, a lot of these homes, vaccination has already been happening there. So how many more people are we waiting for? I'm just gonna throw this out there. I would like to see us discuss visiting policies in other congregate care settings, including group homes. There are families who have been separated from children, adult children and minors for a good portion of this pandemic. And I'd like to see that be addressed. But people need visitors. And I like the expansion of how many people you can have. I understand scheduling is necessary for logistical reasons.
Yeah, maybe I'm just so 13 months into the pandemic that I'm just naturally queasy upon the sight of anything. Like, I watched the NFL draft last night, and there were tons of people in an amphitheater, like with no masks on, like cheering away like wild people. And my natural reaction was like, ugh. Even if there are 30% of Americans who are fully vaccinated. But I'm a little bit uneasy, but I do share your sentiment, Megan. It's been a long time for a lot of people not to have had access to family members and support staff that are integral to their life. So although I'm a little bit uneasy, I think you've got to roll with it. Michelle, what about you?
Am I the only one that thinks this looks like a really good middle round here? Yeah, I do. I think this looks, I think this is a sensible scheme. It's contingent on vaccination. It allows time for the second dose to actually take effect. It has sensible limits adjusted based on the setting. We have talked at length about mental health becoming a bit of a catch-all term over the course of this pandemic, but I think we can all agree that isolation is a direct contributor to mental health in a very real way. And this, to me, seems like an effort to address that while still maintaining a lot of very sensible precautions. If I have a loved one in a Saskatchewan long-term care home, I'm pretty okay with this.
Yeah, it seems like there are a lot of guardrails in place that do make a lot of sense there. That's for sure. Despite my just natural knee-jerk reaction of like, people.
Yeah, I mean, fair. And some people might still feel that way, but I suspect the hardest part for a lot of people will be waiting the 3 weeks between the second dose and when they can actually get to visit. Like, that's a very cautious approach. No one can accuse them of being over hasty on
that's
this.
True. That's right. True.
And following up on Michelle's point, if you're feeling uncomfortable, like, no one's also forcing you to go. Like, there's other people who can go take your place now that more people are allowed to visit. I would just like to throw out here, we've visited three different regions of the country that are all dealing with crisis and long-term care homes. This is a national issue and it needs to be treated as such.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. All right, guys. Well, thank you for going rapid fire with me across a couple different provinces. I appreciate that. Coming up next, as the pandemic looms over the spring and summer months, public parks remain in the spotlight. We'll discuss the implications of those public spaces being used during COVID-19. This is the Now News Panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.